Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
And that's right, we are live here with End Zone and Falcon Zone Super Show. I want to welcome everybody in. It's been just a crazy week, and hopefully we can try to get to all the topics everybody was looking forward to this week. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
I'm doing great, Jeremy.
Doing good, Jeremy. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Like I said, there is a ton that has happened. It's really starting to pick up now that we're into the preseason. A few of the things we're gonna run over here in a minute in End Zone. 49ers have a big injury. There's a front runner now to host the 2015 NFL Draft, and we kind of answered the question of who's probably gonna be the answer in Minnesota. But first, I want to get into, I don't know if you guys heard this, but Brian Banks, we all kind of know his story by now, was wrongfully accused of rape, spent some time in prison, time on probation. Turns out he was wrongfully accused. He was a promising football star at the time, and I believe the last team he actually played for was the Atlanta Falcons, who cut him right before the start of last year. But the NFL has been working with him over that time anyway, and he now has a new position in the front office. He's going to be the manager in football operations department, and he's going to assist the officiating department on game days as far as looking at tape and making decisions, is last I heard.
Wow.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Reginald, one of the things I saw with this young man, and I tracked his career from high school, saw the story of what happened with him, the time that he served in prison. He still has actually 3 years of supervised probation now. But the wonderful thing about it was that the one thing that football teaches is character. And through it all, he showed great character. Atlanta then picked him up, brought him into camp. That didn't pan out for him. I think that was just due to the fact that he just didn't have a lot of experience. But again, his character was able to, you know, rise to the top, and the NFL still saw fit for him to live out his NFL dream just in a different capacity. So it was just great to hear that Mr. Banks was able to land in the NFL after all.
Right, and that was kind of my take on it. It's a great feel-good story. I'm glad to see that the NFL recognized, like Coach mentioned, good character guys that, you know, unfortunately for him, you know, his just time away from football is what prevented him from even making the squad, because he just didn't get the work in. But to see this happen for him, I really was excited to see that.
Yeah, this is, I'm not going to say the fairy tale ending, because I feel like he's going to work himself up and be higher in the league in the coming years. But it's a great bookmark, I guess, or a great end of a chapter for Brian Banks, that he's actually, you know, getting credibility for being a good guy and finally moving past, you know, the wrongful accusations and stuff like that. The NFL, to me, did the best job in reaching out to notice that the kid's still very football smart, even if physically he may not can keep up with the new athletes.
Right, yeah. If you go back to his college career, I mean, he was an outstanding, and again, like you mentioned, had he had the opportunity to actually develop and actually play as long as he should have played, I'd have no doubt he would have been a high pick and probably a really good player, just based on what I saw film on him from when he was in college. So yeah, he definitely has a lot of football IQ. So I think he should do well in that position.
I don't disagree. I think that his IQ has proven itself, and that's why they found the means and the ways of making sure that they didn't waste that type of talent, you know, from a cerebral standpoint, that they were able to apply it to the NFL just in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. This is as much heat as Goodell's taken lately. I'll give him part credit on this. I'll defend Goodell anyway. I think he's a good guy. He's in a hard position. with a lot of these things he has to talk about and decisions he has to make. But I feel that he had a hand in trying to get Mr. Banks a job, and he's done well with it. But moving on, I talked about the 49ers have been dealt an injury bug, and it's hit the defensive tackle Glenn Dorsey, who will be out for the year with a torn bicep. Now, we've all pulled something in our ankle or leg before, but I don't have a whole lot of experience on torn biceps. You guys ever do anything similar to this?
Not me personally. Thankfully, about the most injury I've ever had is broken arm back when I was a kid playing football. But other than that, and that was because I played with no pads. But other than that, no, I can't imagine what a torn bicep or a torn muscle of any kind would feel like. So, Coach, is that typically because of his weightlifting, or how is that injury typically sustained?
Well, it's a multitude of ways that you can sustain this particular injury. Primarily, it starts with the weightlifting because, again, these guys have to be, you know, tremendously strong, not only just for their body weight, but then the speed of the game. But there are other ways you can do this. He could have been doing something as freaky as playing basketball and torn it. But primarily what probably happened, being that they're in training camp now and they're going live, he probably was outreaching. And what I call outreaching is that he probably was trying to go after a play, a running play, and someone went past him and he went to grab him or his arm got caught. And 9 times out of 10, that's how you end up extending the arm, and it opens. If you think about it, you just spread your arms open and somebody's running past you and you go to grab them, that's normally how the tear occurs.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I can speak on as far as this is my dad's actually torn a muscle in his arm before, and he could either have the surgery or just go on without it, and he just, you know, learned to use his arm a different way as far as picking up stuff. But to me, it's not necessarily, you know, we feel bad that it happened to, you know, another good guy in the NFL and everything, but it seems like the 49ers are getting dealt blow after blow in this offseason so far, to where if they don't watch out, one of those other two teams, maybe Arizona, could take that other wild card out of that division and leave them out of the playoffs.
Well, you know what, as I think about that and to that point, my team suffered that same type of scenario just last year. I mean, when you get that injury bug that you can't account for, it changes you from that team that made it to the NFC Championship one year and only won 4 games the next. So you're right. It's going to be interesting to see how they rebound from this.
One of the things I want to add is that although the injuries are there, and that's just part of football, so as coaches we know that these things are there. We play these scenarios out in our head every day in our coaches' meeting. One of the things that they have the luxury of doing right now is that they're going into the preseason. And so now they're going to get an opportunity to see what they really have in camp, because they're forced to look at it now. So guys that were going to start are now, you know, or backups or what have you. I don't want to necessarily use the term backup here, but I'm using that term loosely. Would now get a chance and the opportunity to step up and prove why they were selected to come into training camp and now hopefully make this roster. So now a lot of shifting is going to go on with all of the injuries that they've had most recently, but also they get a chance to see what they realistically have and know if it's going to fit in right now early and get a chance to see that over the course of the preseason.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a true test to see, exactly what that team's made of as far as being able to rebound from an injury like this. But as we transition into the next topic, which is a city not far from San Francisco, honestly, or at least they're in the same state. I'm not very good at judging distance like that. But Los Angeles is kind of emerging as the front runner to host the 2015 NFL Draft. If they host this thing in L.A., do you think more people want to go to it?
Well, I think that going back to, let's look at the backstory on this when we talked about the Raiders move. I think that this move with L.A., again, is promoting L.A. If you remember the special report that I did on Oakland and some of the opportunities that they might have to move that team even into Texas, I think this is where the NFL places that stage, begins to work that market. I think Oakland will end up in L.A. personally as a result of this. But the difference will be that they will not probably be in Orange County. That's something that came to me as of today. There's a difference in what was happening in – they'll be in L.A. County versus Orange County, which that's where the teams have resided, you know, in the past with the Rams and the Colts. So now this push, this presentation might very well be the writing on the wall for Oakland to move there and L.A. to get their team.
Right, and even from the other opposite end of this, the less complicated end of this, the weather has to play a factor in this. I'm one of those guys who is a big proponent, for instance, with the Pro Bowl not moving from Hawaii. I think that actually is part of the lure. I wouldn't want to go to a Pro Bowl in any other state or city or any other state other than Hawaii, A, because of tradition, but then B, because of the weather. I mean, you get an opportunity to go to a tropical island to watch a Pro Bowl, as well as with the NFL draft. They've got the infrastructure to handle the major influx. And as I mentioned on the show before, when we talked about this before, I felt like L.A. was the only other city outside of New York that had the infrastructure to handle that amount of people at that time, as well as the media coverage.
It's true. And, you know, not to be left out, Arthur's thrown his hat in the ring to say that he'd love it to be in Atlanta, but I think we're a good handful of years away from that.
Well, on top of that, in Atlanta, we've already proven that we can't handle that massive amount of people. I think we did okay with the Olympics, but I know that from a weather perspective, with the NBA All-Star game that was here a few years ago or some years ago, where we had the ice storm and it basically shut everything down. You had players walking from the hotels and whatnot. So I think that might be a far stretch for us. We'll see, though.
Yeah, that's true, because sometimes money talks.
Absolutely.
But let's see, as we, you know, clearly I agree with pretty much everything we've said, and we've been saying this for a while, that, you know, there's going to be a team in Los Angeles sooner rather than later, and more than likely the draft's going to be there next year. Maybe we get together a big end zone, Falcon zone trip and head out to L.A. for some research and see how these things go down.
I would absolutely love that, especially since I know it's in the budget, Jeremy.
Yeah, we'll see if some of our sponsors would like to help us out with that, and you know, so we can go research and tell everybody how amazing other sponsors are we have. But so far, we've learned a lot so far this off season. But there's two main things that have kind of, thanks to the stories they're attached to, have kind of, you know, they're still kind of going on a little bit, and they're kind of funny. The two major things that I was going to share today that I feel like we've learned is you are what your Twitter says you are, and two, anyone can say they're the best corner in the league. Notwithstanding, I want to go ahead and throw it out there now, I'm the best corner in the league.
Right, and I'm going to take my Twitter account and change my profession to quarterback just in case I get the NFL contract. They can't say I'm just the armchair, I'm just a la Jimmy Graham. So, yeah, that's And it's interesting being in the technology industry as part of my main field of focus. I often tell people all the time that they have to be very careful of the message that they have out on social media and how active companies are using social media outlets to determine everything from their hiring practices to whether or not they're going to fire someone. I mean, you just be surprised at the level of activity and what's being paid attention to by a lot of these corporations as it relates to social media.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think one of the things, and it's talked about, believe it or not, guys, at the beginning of every season, as a matter of fact, when you go into training camp, normally the director of media operations comes down and gives a spiel on, you know, just topics such as this. Be careful, be mindful, be aware of what you say, when you say it, where you say it, and whom you say it to. So they do get a very strong tutorial on the new technology that's out there. And it's not just your traditional social media now that we see as far as Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. You have other media outlets that people tend to go to try to, you know, make names for themselves. So they're looking all the time. I'm sure that each team, as well as the NFL themselves, have a master group of people that sit and watch every player's every movement when it comes to social media. And for the record, I would just put mine out on a Twitter account that I would be, I'm going to always be the Super Bowl coach of the year. So since we're going to add those, accolades to those type of situations, let's just put it out there.
Right, and I guess it, instead of being the best corner in the league, as we transition into the next order of business on End Zone today, is I guess I'm going to change my Twitter to say that I am Andy Dalton, because Andy Dalton got paid this week. What was it, $115, $119 million over the next 5 years, something like that?
Yeah, I was really surprised they committed to him that fast. I guess that because there was some question in the offseason of whether or not they were going to commit to him, even despite some of the language that had been mentioned by some of the players. So I was surprised that they committed to him and that amount of money, given all of the question marks this offseason.
From a coach's perspective and doing, player personnel, I'm very surprised that they committed such a large amount to Mr. Dalton. Now, there are some things there. I mean, when you're looking at it from a coach's side, I mean, he's shown some good things, but he's shown some inconsistencies as well. So I'm not quite sure if the $115 million mark is where I would want to put him, on the director player personnel side of it, and you're dealing with the administration side. I don't know. That's a lot. And so you have to also look at how that's going to affect your cap over time. Now, when you look at the actual infrastructure of the contract, I think it's only $22 million that is actually guaranteed in money. And if the contract plays out perfectly for him, he can see up to $96 million of his contract. But, again, you must understand there will be some type of restructuring to that. I don't think he sees all of that, but that's a lot in a short amount of time. I think he'll see the majority of that over a three-year period.
Well, I mean, what it brings up, because as I said earlier when we were talking about it, this is it's a Kaepernick-style deal as far as it's very team-friendly. And, they do have the option to pretty much cut him loose in a couple years. But when you look at it, if they – it's not like this is Alex Smith in Kansas City where he's got, two guys who could – in Chase Daniel and Aaron Murray that could take over and do at least as good, if not better, than he can. The major backup, I believe, up there behind the Red Rifle in Cincinnati is A.J. McCarron. So do they feel highly enough on A.J. McCarron to cut him loose in a couple years?
I'm not quite sure of that. I think McCarron, had a lot of weapons around him in college. There are some things that still are left questionable, in my opinion. I think that's why they probably committed to that long term so that they could get him ready. But again, in about 3 years into that contract, or about year three of the contract, I think you're going to see some shifting in the atmosphere. And again, there will be some other quarterbacks that will be coming through. So there again, I don't know if he's realistic. I don't think realistically he sees all 5 years, honestly, guys. I think they'll get to year three and they'll make their decision at that point. As to what they think McCarron can do at that time. They're going to give him that much time to learn.
Right, and the one thing you do get with McCarron coming in, that is the intangible, and I don't know that I've actually seen that with Dalton, is you get that winning attitude. The guy's used to winning, so he's going to bring a different type of energy to that position once he does learn the position. And maybe that it's worth a gamble. I mean, definitely. I think they keep Dalton quiet now with giving him what he's given based on what Coach Hill just mentioned. But I think McCarron could actually, start moving the table here in a couple of years after holding that clipboard. So it's going to be interesting to watch how that pans out.
Yeah,
and then
keep
in mind, too. That's okay, Jeremy. I'm sorry. Also keep in mind, too, guys, that if he gets hurt, you get a chance to see McCarron early. Dalton has been, nicked and bruised and banged a little bit. So now if he faces something like that early, because now the pressure's on for him to perform a lot and quite consistently and often. So now if he has to run around out the pocket a lot, or he finds himself in trouble, or he takes a lot of straight-on hits, and he can't sustain these hits or these, you know, the way the injury bug has been biting lately, don't be too surprised you see Aaron Corker.
Yeah, and I was able to look this up. I actually beat the stat guy to it. Actually, McCarron's still third on the depth chart. Their backup is Jason Campbell, who has already proven he can more than step in and lead a team when need be.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't know that that was their second guy. But to Coach's point, he's also a guy that gets banged up and nicked up very quickly.
Yes.
So, I mean, A.J. McCarron, I think it's his for you know, it's going to be his show if they're not careful.
Yeah, I think it's just going to – we're just going to have to wait and see on that. I mean, the Red Rifle's been doing pretty well so far. He's been getting them to the playoffs. I believe he's got – one touchdown and six interceptions in three playoff games and no wins. But, you know, if we're going to be throwing swords and daggers, then we have to remember Matty Ice didn't get that win for a while either.
Hey, watch him out there.
That was not a shot. That's facts. But not saying he didn't deserve the win other times, just saying it didn't happen. And it is about results in the league.
Yeah, but, fair enough.
But let's swap to the quarterback competition in Minnesota. And is this competition basically over? From what I'm hearing, Ponder's pretty much on the outside looking in. Castle's even further outside, and that Bridgewater has stepped up to a level to where they may just, by week two or three, he may be the guy.
I told you guys during the draft when we sat there together that I actually felt like Bridgewater was going to be the guy. A lot of teams are going to hate the fact that they let this kid drop and they didn't pick him up because you can see it in college. I don't know if it was a mechanics thing or what the issue was about for him in college, but I am not surprised. I mean, the kid just plays the game well, so I'm not surprised to see this happen.
Oh, Mr. Bridgewater. Let's go back to draft, guys, and I told you as we looked at positions and we broke them down that I thought that he was the best quarterback in the draft by far. Why? Because, one, he played in the pro-style offense his entire time at Louisville. So he's more than prepared. I think what happened to him in the combine is why he dropped Reggie. It's because it wasn't a question about his ability and his strength to make those throws. It was just that he overthought it. There isn't such thing as over-preparation, and I think he was trying to do too much too fast and too often. Even in his pro day, he did terrible. I mean, he really did. I mean, he really stunk. But overall, when you go and look at this kid on film consistently, it is there. So I would not be surprised. I mean, they're naming Cassell the starter right now, but Bridgewater, don't be surprised by week five, week six, that you'll start seeing him a lot more into the plays and into the vast scheme of things, and by next year he should be the starter, if not this year, somewhere, you know, halfway through the season.
Right. I was even looking at a stat, Jeremy, a little earlier where they were saying he was completing like 53% of his passes already, you know, and not simple toss plays. This guy's carving them up. So I'm excited for the kid. I'm glad to see him doing as well as he is.
Well, in all fairness, it is the Vikings defense that he's carving up. But at the same time, it is what it is at this time of the year. And you know, I want the kid to do good because the fact that they traded back into the first round to grab him and to let it, you know, it was the perfect ending to that part as far as that part of his journey. He's just a good kid who, you know, when given the chance, has done nothing but shine. So, you know, the sky's the limit for him. I hope he does really well.
Well, one of the things I want to add, guys, is that, you know, the fact that he, you know, that's a great stat, Reginald, that you brought to the table, that at 53% in training camp, because that's the biggest thing that the rookies have to overcome. It's just the speed of the game, the complexity of the language he's always been used to. So that's not the learning curve for him. That is very minimal for him. Now it's seeing the defense and seeing how fast he makes these adjustments, and the reason he's throwing at that 53% right now is because he's been prepared. So now he knows exactly what he's looking at. He's adjusted to the speed now. He's making those tough throws in the coverage. Even in practice, they're scripting things that he should not make, and he's completing them. So now they're seeing and having a lot of confidence that he's the guy that we can go into crunch time with, and he is going to be able to handle this pressure. So look out for Mr. Bridgewater. I do agree that a lot of teams slept on him, and that's because they looked at what he did in the combine, what he did in his pro day. So just look for him on Sunday and watch what he does there.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be one I'm going to try to watch this preseason just because I want to see exactly what he can do. He does have some good weapons up there. Cordarrelle Patterson's emerging as a top receiver, so it should be a really good time to be a Minnesota Viking in the next coming years. But I guess, you know, for a while I used to get a lot of personal shots were taken and stuff, and not in a bad way, but a lot of people used to like to mess with me because it seemed like I didn't go a week on a media thing I was doing without talking about this guy, and it's been a little while since we talked about him, but Brett Favre has made sure that we're going to talk about him this week, and it's for an actual good thing. Favre and the Packers have kind of agreed that he's going to go into their Hall of Fame Ring of Honor sometime next summer. To me, even though you have to honor this guy because he's arguably one of the best ever, it almost feels like the Packers are just making sure that when Favre goes into the NFL Hall of Fame next year, because he'll be on the ballot, I'm pretty sure I don't know many people that wouldn't vote for him to be in it. But I think they're just hoping that when he makes his speech at the NFL Hall of Fame that he remembers that team in Green Bay he played for in a positive light and not because of the kind of little tiff they had a couple years ago.
Yeah, I can see that definitely being one of the reasons. And I mean, just hands down. I mean, of course they've had some great, you know, Bart Starr and some of those guys that come through there, but Brett Favre, when you see Brett Favre, I couldn't imagine him going into the Hall of Fame in anything else other than them being a Packer. I mean, that's what I will always remember him for, is just being that guy. So, yeah, this could definitely be one of those ploys.
I must admit that his time in Green Bay, Mr. Wolf took some great chances with him, and it panned out. As a matter of fact, he is one of the premier players that Mr. Wolf, at the time who was the general manager, would be known for. Brett Favre, by far, has exceeded anything that you could have possibly wanted out of that position, but more especially as a player. I mean, you know, he has – I mean, players like that in any sport only come along every 25 years. You know, you see him – or you see him once in a lifetime. He most definitely has proven himself to be one of the greatest to ever play the game in it, you know, as far as the NFL is concerned.
Yeah, and like I said, he's one of my favorites of all time. I'm glad I got to see as many games, at least on TV, that he played, and I still go back and watch some of his highlights now. But, you know, as we kind of finish up End Zone and we'll kind of cross the bridge into Falcon Zone here in a minute, our trivia question will actually help us do that. I had told you guys earlier in the week, I guess for now we're going to call this the trivia segment, Are You in the Zone? And I told you guys that the clue was that it pertains to the early pro career of Brett Favre, you know, right towards the end of his Falcons tenure. Are you guys ready for this one?
Oh, let's do it.
Let's try.
Well, we all know that Brett Favre was famously traded when from Atlanta to Green Bay. And in the process, he was. Do you know what he was traded for? That's not the trivia question, but it's going to set it up.
He was, if I'm not mistaken, he was traded for a first round pick. Was it, am I not mistaken by that?
Yes, he was.
He was.
He was for a first round.
Okay.
And an additional choice, actually, 17th.
Was it?
Yep.
I know it was the 19th overall, which is what this question centers around. It was the 19th pick in the next draft. Who did the Falcons select the next year at number 19?
That would have been 1992.
Correct.
Was it Andre Bruce?
Coach, you got a guess?
No, I don't. I don't. I'm drawing a blank right now, guys, to be quite honest with you. 92. Who was the coach in 92 in Atlanta?
It was Jerry Glanville.
It was Glanville.
Glanville. I want to say I don't know where Andre Rison fell into the vast scheme of that.
Well, he wasn't traded. They didn't draft him. They
didn't draft him, okay.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I mean, no, I'm drawing a blank right now, guys. But if I had to take a guess, I would have to go Reginald with Andre Bruce at that particular, in that era, in the early 90s.
At number 19 in the 1992 draft, they selected a running back named Tony Smith. Tony Smith was who they drafted there.
Tony Smith.
And the fun bridge we're going to do here, to segue into the that was kind of the tie-in there. But Tony Smith went to a little college kind of out away from a lot of things called Southern Mississippi, also where Brett Favre went.
Yeah, same college. Ooh.
And I'm not done there.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken, a guy who was just inducted into the Hall of Fame, the first punter inducted into the Hall of Fame, Mr. Ray Guy, also went to Southern Mississippi.
That is correct.
Hmm.
I'd like to add something to that, Jeremy, because I saw that with Tony Smith, but for some reason I thought he was a receiver. That's why I didn't go with him. I didn't know he was a running back, but let me add a little something, some spicy if you guys will let me.
All right.
How about Mr. Ron Wolf, who was the general manager at that time of Green Bay Packers, wanted to take Brett Favre, but Atlanta selected him first.
Ah.
When Atlanta put him on the table and he came in for his physical, he actually failed the physical.
Wow.
He suffered from a degenerating bone disease called vascular, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, neurosis, which is the same thing that Bo Jackson had that ended his career.
Wow.
Mr. Ron Wolf petitioned hard enough and overruled it and got him with the Packers. That's how he ended up a Packer.
Wow.
And the rest is history.
See, we can go so many layers deep here. We're like a
cornucopia of useless trivia.
Exactly. Hey,
and,
how's that? You guys are
going
to have to make me step my game up now. I didn't understand.
Hey,
I didn't know I had
Here's the cherry on top, guys. Here's the cherry on top. In our segment when we spoke to Harper LaBelle, and he was in Atlanta, Mr. LaBelle asked him personally. He has this very noticeable scar in his midriff area. And he was in a bad car accident while he was in college, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And they end up taking out, can you remember, Jeremy, exactly how many feet of his intestines?
It was a good bit.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I can't remember the number.
Yeah, but Mr. LaBelle actually told us that they took out, you know, several feet of his intestines as a result, and he ended up coming back the very next year to play in his college career. So it goes to show his toughness went all the way back, you know, into his college days. So imagine with that being and I'm sure teams knew about this prior to Atlanta even drafting him. But, you know, they took the chance, and then for him to actually fail his physical going into Green Bay and for the general manager to fight hard enough to get it overturned for him to end up playing there, which is rarely if ever done, guys. Once you fail a physical, that's pretty much it. You know what I'm saying? Unless you, no pun intended, a Peyton Manning and you're playing with all these flex rods in your neck and things of that nature, nobody takes the type of chance on you. You know what I mean? Especially young in your career and – with the fact that, you know, they felt you stuck it up in Atlanta, and when he first went to Green Bay and they put him into a game, Bajowski was the quarterback then, and he took an injury in Cincinnati in a game that he had to step in. He threw a pick six, and the crowd was booing him to get him out, and his backup was Ty Detmer. That's who they used to play next. But on top of that, he overcame, he came back out the second half, and he lit it up and scored with 13 seconds left in the game, and the rest was history after that for Mr. Favre.
Wow. Coach Hill is just taking your spot as the Favre aficionado, Jeremy.
Hey, I'm okay with that. I've never said I know everything. And the stat guy just pushed this to me. According to the Wikipedia page that he's pulling it off of, it was 30 inches of his small intestine.
Okay, wow, 30 inches, okay, wow.
But, yeah, that's going to wrap us up. And in case any of us make it to Sports Jeopardy with Dan Patrick, which should be airing soon, I believe, on the Internet somewhere, we'll all know that Brett Favre was famously traded for Tony Smith, who played a handful of years, was actually not a bad back. But, you know, he played his 3 years, and like most running backs do, then they leave. But that's going to wrap it up for us for the End Zone, and we'll see you guys on the other side of the break with Falcon Zone. We've got all kinds of fun stuff. Hard Knocks finally debuted. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break. Hi, Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more. And that's right, we're here for the Falcon Zone. Welcome back. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by Mr. Reggie Walker and, of course, the coach, Haywood Hill.
Hey, guys.
Hey, thank you for having me, Jeremy.
Good to have you guys back on. And, you know, I don't understand. We talk about that song all the time. I don't understand why it's not used more and I mean, clearly it's probably stuff we don't know about, but I don't know why Hard Knocks doesn't use it as the theme song.
Well, it's about a paycheck. I'm
yep.
sure. You got to.
Yep.
There's an artist behind it, I'm sure. There's money involved.
I agree.
Probably so. But before we get into any of the Hard Knocks stuff, which did debut this week, we'll hit on a few other smaller things first. Defensive back Dwight Lowry, who was brought over, left Friday night light scrimmage with a head injury. Mike Smith says he doesn't think it's serious. Right now he's still going through the concussion protocol. How big could this be if Lowry can't, you know, come back in soon?
Well, I mean, this goes all the way back in my mind to free agency in that Atlanta let Thomas Dekou go with hopes of upgrading that position. Their main target, they made it known, was Jarius Byrd, who the Saints stole. And then they were left scrambling. They didn't get the guy that they were really looking for in draft. So they bring in this veteran guy who has a history of concussion problems. So I think it's going to be a little bit bigger than a breadbasket, personally. And this could play big because if Sizemore, who's the guy, or Southworth, the guy that they drafted in the third round, if he doesn't pan out, then, I mean, now you're going to be left scrambling again.
Well, I agree, Reginald. I think that this is huge for them. I mean, I think the coach basically is putting a soft spin on it. Again, this the history of the concussions and, you know, in the wake of what is already, you know, on the table for the NFL to have to deal with at a large scale, is going to be taken serious. I think that the kid that they drafted will be able to fit in. I think they can make it simple for him based on the defensive scheme that they're running. I don't think they're going to – I think it's just a matter of getting him up to speed now versus having a safety valve for him. And you have to do that sometime with draft picks. You have to let him know it's now. And so you simplify his reads and you let him step up and play right now. I think the draft pick was okay for them. I think they're okay right now. But, again, the luxury, as I spoke of in the segment with End Zone, as it pertains to the 49ers, is the same thing as pertaining to Atlanta right now. You have these preseason games to see what you have. Plus, Atlanta's been very smart with their cap money. So, again, if there's a veteran out there they're comfortable with, they still have time after they evaluate these guys in preseason to see what they really have on the table.
Right. They do have about $9 million in cap space, I believe. So, yeah, that's a significant amount to be able to go out and find somebody that maybe gets released in training camp due to cap casualty or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and, you know, this guy was really going to – Lowry was going to really play a big role, and he still could play a big role to this point, and I'm glad they're taking the right precautions with it. You're kind of mandated to have to do it, but they were real quick to act on this and were able to get him off the field and get him looked at. And we wish the best on the recovery for all that. But that brings up Friday Night Lights was on this past Friday. 12,316 fans were officially there the other night. Did that include either of the two of you?
No, I actually did not get a chance to get out. I did intend to get out. I will be taking a look at the preseason game tomorrow to kind of see what we had left. But I was pleasantly surprised at the amount of fans that showed up for that game. I think that might have been the largest amount of fans for that event since they've been doing it. So, no, I didn't get a chance to get out personally.
Like Reginald, I did not get an opportunity to get out as well. However, that speaks volumes to what the Falcons are doing different now based on you being an avid and staunch Falcon fan, Reginald. That you know, those numbers are speaking to just a Friday night scrimmage. Imagine what preseason is going to bring and then actually what they're going to do this season.
Yeah, and I was not able to get out there as well. It kind of snuck up on me. I knew it was coming up, and about Friday afternoon, about 5:30, a friend of mine texted me to ask if I was going to head up that way, and I was more than a couple hours away at that point, so I didn't make it either. But there's plenty of preseason stuff up there. And, you know, our friend Harper LaBelle, who's been on the show a handful of times, has been up there with 92.9 The Game pretty much for about every weekend, it seems like. So at some point with all the invites we keep getting sent, we'll head up that way and check everything out. And I look forward to getting to see the guys, you know, before it gets super serious.
Right. I'm really anxious to see tomorrow where we are with the whole toughness aspect. I know we'll get into Hard Knocks and some of the things that were there and some of the stories out of camp already, but I'm anxious to see how it all kind of starts to play itself out tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely so.
Likewise. I'm interested to see if my predictions are correct on Atlanta and their defense right now.
And did want to mention, I don't know if you guys got to see any of the Hall of Fame stuff last week. It was really cool. I had never gotten to see all the speeches at one time like that. Everybody kind of went a different direction, had a different tangent on everything. But, you know, even though it wasn't really a stat back when he played, a lot of people credit Claude Humphrey as the all-time sack leader. But regardless, he was a ridiculously insanely good defensive lineman. And he got inducted in the Hall of Fame. I believe he's the first Falcon in. And it could open the door for a handful of his teammates to go in.
Actually, Jeremy, he would be the second Falcon in after Mr. Deion Sanders. Thank you very much. That means, yes. It was great to see Mr. Humphrey go in. And knowing the stats that he put up, he's a super nice guy. And on top of that, he was a class act when he played the game, and you did not want to see him coming around that end.
I must agree. I had an opportunity to see his speech. The one thing I liked about his speech is when he said, you know, it took me 30 years, guys, and let me take my time. You know, it's going to take me a little time. And as he embraced the whole environment, he was so humble in his speech. He was so appreciative in his, you know, in his words and his deed. And his whole demeanor spoke, you know, a career that spoke nothing but class all the way through and through. And I liked his little joke about Jerry Glanville. And he was saying, you know, when he first came into Atlanta, that this is the guy said he was leaving tickets for Elvis Presley. He said, I don't know if this is the right fit for him as a, you know, being that, you know, we're, you know, being drafted and coming in, so, you know, this guy's leaving tickets for a man that's not even alive. Y'all sure he's the right coach for us? So he had a lot of candid moments in his speech. And more importantly, I think it spoke volumes to it doesn't matter where you play because, again, we're talking about someone who is a great football player who came from a historical black college at Tennessee State. And so, again, I applaud Mr. Humphrey for a well-deserving career and all that he added to the NFL. He's well-deserving to be there.
Yeah, and the way they do the Hall of Fame whole ceremony and the Hall of Fame game, which we were able to watch as well, to me, that's one of the classiest things the NFL does in honoring the Warriors that put so much on the line way back when, before we knew about, you know, safer helmets and equipment and testing for concussions and all this kind of thing. So it was really cool. And, you know, Reggie, I'll give Falcons fans that one. He can be the second Falcon in. I'll give you Deion Sanders. He did play a handful of years here.
Thank you, sir.
Even though, remember, he never led the league in interceptions, but I think it's because they were scared to throw to him.
Absolutely, absolutely. And forgive Jeremy, Mr. Sanders. He's just funny.
Shots fired.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like somewhere down the road I'm going to get challenged to a foot race now, but, you know, prime time, I'm ready. Let's do it. I'll have to, per my wife, I'll have to make sure my health insurance is paid up for that day. But I'll happily race anybody if prime time's up for it. But let's talk about Hard Knocks. It finally previewed, and I say finally because it seems like we've known about it forever. And I was able to catch it. I hope you guys were able to catch maybe a piece of it, or if not, we'll try to go over, you know, some of the bigger stuff. A lot of people tried to make some stories bigger than they really were. You know, what were some of the things you took away from it, Reggie?
Well, the one thing that I did take away from it is you can definitely tell the difference in the direction that the team is headed, and you can definitely see the immediate impact of Mr. Brian Cox and Mr. Mike Tice. You just saw a different way of things. I mean, aggression, things that I have not seen out of this team since the days of Chuck Smith and that 98 team. So I was pleasantly surprised to see the direction that the team was headed. I was really pleased with what I saw.
I did not get a chance to actually see Hard Knocks, but one thing I do know about Coach Tice and Coach Cox is that they both bring a lot of energy. And the fact that they were having the fights between the offense and the defensive line, I think Mr. Matthews got locked up in a couple of things early, proved that they are making their statement right now, and they're preparing themselves for New Orleans. So, again, this is one of those years where, no more talking, no more five-side chants, no more, you know, win one for the Gipper. It is right now. And I think what you're going to see in Atlanta is a very, very aggressive team. You're going to see what you see in New Orleans, you're about to see in Atlanta now. Because now they're taking off the collars and they're turning them loose. And be prepared for this team. Again, I told you, I'm predicting them now 10-6, 11-5 for the season. But I'm pushing more toward the 11-5 mark because, again, they know what is at stake. And it's very clear. It is written on the board. Now, here's the objective. Win. And win now.
Yeah, I think 11-5 is kind of where we're all kind of leaning right now, especially with Drew Brees kind of getting dinged up and missing a few days of practice. That makes that first game real important. But, you know, what I took away from this, it was something they brought up, and it's kind of what you guys were saying. This is a different team. They showed how in the first game last year when Matt Ryan took that late hit against the Saints, nobody really come to his defense, where this year they come to everybody's defense. We got people scrapping and fighting and clawing all over the place. But the thing that really – one of the things that stood out to me the most, and, Reggie, you should be glad. I was super excited, and I was going to blow up your phone about it, but I realized that I wasn't watching it live. I had to watch it a little bit later on. But when Croy Bearman, who's trying to make a comeback after the Achilles injury that ended his season last year, when he was matched up against Jake Matthews, and the more he got in Jake Matthews' face, the more Jake Matthews put him on his rear end. And I hate it for Bearman because he's a good guy, but Matthews didn't take no crap off nobody, so maybe he's got a little more Taylor Lewan in him than we thought.
Yeah, I again, have to digress to both you and Coach Hill on that pick that I wasn't very high about when draft went down. But what you're right, watching him, the one thing that I did notice is he was not getting beat at all. So
yep.
Matter who they put up against him, he was – flat out demolishing anybody on his side. So it's going to be, I'm sure Mr. Ryan has got to be pretty happy to have this guy protecting his blind side this year.
Yeah, and
also,
sorry, go ahead.
Also, guys, take in consideration that, again, look at his pedigree. I mean, he is under a tremendous amount of pressure right now to perform. I mean, with the uncles, the dad, the cousins, I mean, it's right there in front of him. So if at any time it was questioned, his ability to have this toughness factor in, and just go look at all the people that are in the NFL now and before him and all the people he grew up with in football that was grooming him all along, probably since he was 2 years old.
Yeah, and you know, I'll give HBO credit. Not only was it a very entertaining show, pretty much 50 of the 55 minutes I was highly entertained. You're going to have your highs and lows. But it could have been good editing that Matthews never got beat. But at the same time, yeah, you bring up not just his pedigree, but I believe later on this year the Falcons will have to go to Green Bay, where there's a chance that Cousin Clay could be rushing his side quite a bit.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day when I was watching the show. And that's going to be an interesting matchup to see blood against blood. But I think he's ready, man. I didn't think I would be able to say that about him so fast, given his pedigree, but I must give it up. That the guy is the real deal. He is definitely the real deal.
Oh, yeah, he looked good.
Yeah, I want to say expect to see Clay rushing that side. Expect that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one thing you're going to see is Clay is going to demand that. I want to see if he's worth that pick. And so now he's going to have to earn his money, and trust me, his cousin is going to give him everything he can handle, and he's going to prove why he was that number one pick. Because, trust me, they're going to go here and expect them to actually fight. I mean, expect them to have to lock it up because Clay is going to say, you know, I'm going to get there, and Matthews is going to say, no, I'm not going to let you have it. So it's going to be one of those things where it's just, you know, it's just going to be within them both. The DNA is going to show up, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You know, just putting it on the table. The DNA is going to show up, and you're going to see two great athletes collide, and we're going to see what happens at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I always like watching, like when Chris Long got to go against his brother, who's a Bears offensive lineman. You like seeing that lineage go against each other. But the other takeaway I had from Hard Knocks was it's kind of a two-part story. One was Steven Jackson got hurt, and then he turned into a running back coach because he was giving some great speeches as far as everything and how the league works. And I mean, it's like he was almost auditioning to be the running back coach, the way he was talking and the way he was acting. But that transitioned into the main thing I took away from it. Devontae Freeman could seriously be maybe one of the bigger pickups in this draft, especially from their side, just in the fact that from what I saw on Hard Knocks and what I've seen of a little bit of the tape on him, he really could be the next Warrick Dunn.
Yeah, I like that kid, man. I mean, aside from the speed aspect, I was really surprised at how strong he was. He hits the hole very hard. He takes direction well. And given the fact that now, you know, Stevens had this, Mr. Jackson has this hamstring injury that's going to sideline him, and they're not going to, you know, rush him back. They've already said that. I think, you know, if Devontae can stay upright and stay healthy, I think he's going to end up becoming the number one guy.
Well, you know what, Reginald, I like to put something on the table. I like the kid Anton Smith from last year, another Florida State product. I think that he's ready now. As a matter of fact, I feel that he's the person that should be auditioning for that starting spot. That's my personal opinion. With Freeman right behind him, I think that's where the competition lies, and maybe Jacquez, you know, falling off in there at third. But again, that's my opinion of what I see with their running back core right now. I think that what you said, Jeremy, earlier about Steven, I think that's the direction he needs to be going personally. At this particular point, no pun intended, but you've extended your career longer than, you know, most running backs ever see. So at this point, if the writing on the wall and it's there, don't be afraid to keep yourself healthy. And I tell players that, you know, I know it's that warrior mentality, it's the spirit, it's the ego. But why take a chance of now tearing the hamstring possibly and being out, you know, indefinitely for the season and being now struggling even trying to hang on going into the next season possibly. So, you know, like you said, they're not going to rush him back, but you got, you know, they got some stuff that they need to really address, and they need to do it in this free season as far as, you know, sifting through the backs that they have and being comfortable with what they all can do and where they want to place them into the vast scheme of their offense.
And to that point that you just brought up, Coach, because even, Jeremy, if you recall when Mike Smith or Coach Smith came out and told the running backs coach that Steven was going to be out for some weeks, it was very surprising to the coach that was going to be the case. But they neglected to mention Anton Smith, who I keep for the life of me not being able to understand, for everything that we saw from this kid every time he touched the ball, what is it about this guy that is not allowing them to give him the opportunity? I'm asking that from a coach's perspective, because I know that there are things behind the scenes that we don't always know. But, I mean, could it be that bad that you know, you keep this guy but you don't give him the opportunity?
Well, you know, Reginald, to answer that question, honestly, I don't know, and I'm giving it from a coach's perspective. Let me tell you why. It's because you're putting him on special teams. It's because he's continuing to roster your team. Because if this guy is what we label a DP, which is a disciplinary problem, you just cut him. You don't keep finding creative ways there, if that makes any sense. You know,
yeah, it does.
You don't have time for that because you went out and you drafted a running back. So at this point, you don't waste any time keeping this guy on your roster when you just drafted a back that you hope will become your future. So, you know, he's already woke up Jacquez with this draft. You know, you got this kid there. I mean, I think he carried the ball six times last year. If I remember, he carried the ball six times for 145 yards. Well, go, you know, just take that into consideration. I mean, he was plugged in and was immediately productive. It wasn't like he had to figure this thing out. He jumped in and contributed. And if I'm not mistaken, he had just as many touchdowns last year as Jacquez did, who had, I think, 80 or 90-something carries.
I was going to say his very first play was a 55-yard touchdown run. So, yeah, I agree. It baffles me. It really does baffle me about Anton Smith.
Yeah, I hope that Atlanta, I hope that Coach Smith doesn't make the mistake that, you know, maybe Glanville made with, you know, as we talked about Brett Favre, you know, this kid goes off somewhere else and ends up in the South, Tampa Bay or something, and he lights you up because you didn't give him that opportunity. But I think when you're talking numbers, when you're talking productivity, when you're talking what he's actually done, like or dislike, he's proven himself. And Atlanta is holding on to him for some reason. But whatever that reason may be, why he can't crack into the, you know, second team or even challenge for first, you know, it's baffling to me. But by far, the numbers don't lie. He's proven himself. Watch him in preseason. Not just for what he did in the season, but go back and look at some of those preseason games against, if I'm not mistaken, they were playing against Jacksonville. And look at what this kid did. So, I mean, he's the real deal. He's legit.
Yeah, and it's funny you guys get into the wide receiver talk as we hit our kind of last drive of the Falcon Zone today, the depth chart was released, the unofficial depth chart, but this is the first time we've actually seen the coaches sit down and rank these guys. And, you know, clearly the running back thing is kind of odd because it lists Steven Jackson as first, Jaquizz Rodgers at second, Anton Smith is actually third, and then Devontae Freeman, Josh Vaughn, Jerome Smith. It surprised me that Freeman was that low and that Jaquizz was that high.
Well, I think that's a seniority thing, A, and then B, you know, he is a rookie. He has yet to prove himself. I think you'll see that depth chart change after tomorrow's game.
Well, and Devin Hester is listed as the number four receiver, which a lot of people were surprised by.
Yeah, I think what they have him behind, actually they had him behind Drew Davis, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, you know, Is that first week just about, hey, this is what we expect to go in? Obviously, Julio Jones wasn't listed up as the 1, 2, or 3 spot, as I recall.
He's on the one I'm looking at.
Oh, he is? Okay. All right.
Yeah. And Hester's actually listed behind him.
Okay. Okay. Which makes sense. I mean, for what they brought Hester in for, I think the objective was if we can get some receiving yards out of him, great. But we're bringing him here to score touchdowns on kickoffs and punt returns, and to excite the crowd. That's what we're bringing him here for.
Right, I agree. I agree that, you know, he brings value to the team and being able to play multiple positions, and that's a great safety valve for him because, if nothing else, he will be able to give you a threat by stretching the field. You can get vertical fast.
Yeah, and I also find it odd that their depth chart, and I know this is technically their base defense, is the nickel, but I find it odd that they only have the two linebackers, the four linemen, and three covers and two safeties, that they're already saying their base defense is going to be the nickel.
Yeah, and I think Mike Smith has been very careful about how he's been phrasing this defense, and I think it's going to be more of an amoeba-style defense, and that you know, several looks, you never really know what it is you're going to get, and I think they just have to see the personnel play out. I think if Corey Bierman doesn't perform to task, I think you'll probably see a little bit more 4-3 than you would usually see. I think you see him line up more as a linebacker, maybe. I know Coach Hill and I've had some conversation about that before. And they're just trying to wait to see what they've got, what they've actually got. I'll tell you another interesting point on the Hard Knocks that was real interesting, and I made sure my kids saw that. My son is when they did the side by side comparisons of the different players and their bodies from when the last day of last season versus the first day of this season. I think they had Bartu up and Peter Kahns was one of the guys they showcased, and Paul Warlow was another guy that they showcased who has put on an extreme amount of weight and has gotten to be, I think, NFL middle linebacker size. So I thought that was a good segment as well.
Well, and to piggyback off of that, the biggest, I guess, most surprising of those side-by-sides would have to be the kicker, Matt Bryant, who was kind of a little stylish in his updated picture.
Yeah, he was. I think they gave him a little bit over that as well.
Yeah, I think they did. He was one of the players that they jokingly gave a pretty good update picture of. But,
I have a quick question, Jeremy, if you don't mind me jumping in before we run out of time. I want to ask you, Reginald, why do you think they went with Bierman versus Massaquoi on the end, considering that, you know, he is coming off this Achilles, and, you know, and there has to be something in the back of his mind that makes him pull up from time to time when he feels a little pain there. What are your thoughts with that?
Well, I mean, like to Jeremy's earlier point, I think there was a lot of editing going on. Obviously, Bierman was going to be one of the highlights of this year just based on the fact of who his wife is and the housewives segment and all of that other madness. But I still don't think he starts over Massaquoi. I think they know what they have in Massaquoi. I think right now they're really trying to figure out where Mr. Bierman fits or if he fits because, again, he carries a pretty significant cap number as well. So I think, if anything, that's what I've read into it is, let's get this guy on the field, let's find out where he fits or if he fits, and let's find out quickly.
Okay. Jeremy, this question is for you real quick. What about Prince Shimbo? A lot was going into him. I like what the kid was doing. How does he fall off and not make this linebacker core?
He is actually listed right behind Joplo Bartu. He's the supposed second string behind him. And, you know, it's funny that he's the one that I was kind of looking for that they really haven't mentioned yet on Hard Knocks. And I know we've only seen one episode, but, you know, it was cool to see the Tyler Starr kind of preview into they're going to follow him and everything. I do think they're choosing him for his girlfriend instead of his actual talent. But, you know, Hard Knocks tends to like to do that.
Amen.
And I'm not saying it was a bad thing. I'm just saying that a lot of times they, you know, the same reason that you would feature Ryan Tannehill in his rookie year as opposed to, you know, somebody maybe trying to make the squad. But, you know.
But to that point, though, Jeremy, while they haven't mentioned him or you haven't heard him mentioned on Hard Knocks as of yet, I can tell you I have read an article not just the other day where he was referred to by Coach Nolan as a refreshing surprise. So whatever it is that Prince Shimbo has been doing to this point, Mike Nolan's attention has been gotten.
Which I'm happy for, because like I said, this kid, Prince Shimbo, I think he had some hiccups towards the end of his college career, but when I met him, he was by far the nicest guy I met all day. And that was no reflection that anybody was bad. It's just, I mean, he made everybody feel like that we've all been friends for the last 20 years. And if you look at his tape and look at the effort he puts forth and the fact that he's second on the depth chart behind Bartu right now, who's holding down the other spot next to Warlow, I mean, it just says that it could be Prince Shimbo time very soon. And this is only in the nickel here. If they flip out to three or four linebackers, that pretty much puts Tim Dobbins and Prince Shimbo right back on the front line.
Right. And I certainly expect this kid to contribute all year. I from what I've seen and heard and read about him, I expect to see his name called a lot.
And to piggyback what you guys were talking about a second ago, right now Jonathan Babineau is one defensive end. Croy Bearman is the other, with Massaqua behind Babineau and OCU Manura behind Bearman is the way they're listed.
Yeah, that would make sense. Now, I mean, especially now they've got a little scramble going on now that Mr. Parade Jerry, who they also showcased, has decided to retire from the game.
Go ahead, Coach. I think you're about to add something.
No, I think just what we're going to see in that preseason game, understand that coaches do bluff depth charts. We do that because we don't want everybody to see what we have, and we'll put things out there just to see how people are going to respond to it. But by the time the season rolls around and they get into week one, expect to see a lot of shifting in that depth chart for sure.
Yeah, I do distinctly remember a particular head coach in New England last year saying that his star quarterback had a lower leg injury for a couple days just to see if the other team would bite on it. So we know they like to play with people, but that is going to wrap it up for us this week. The first preseason game for the Falcons is tomorrow night on the CW Network. CW is actually the local Atlanta channel, and they're going to carry, I believe, all four preseason games along with maybe a Thursday night game or so later on this year. But I know we'll all be tuned in to watch that, and knowing us, we'll probably watch it about 16 times or so before next week.
Yeah, I will be DVRing it. I'll actually go down and tailgate with one of the local tailgate here, and I'll be actually in the dome watching them. So I'll have a nice little report for us next week.
Hey, that'll be great. And, you know, we look forward to tailgating with a lot of the people. I know a lot of people we've reached out and a lot of the people we've met along the way. But for Mr. Reggie Walker and Coach Hill, I am your host, Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.